Have you ever wondered what it's like to witness a murder?
Forrest grabbed the knife and then just stabbed Johnny in one motion.
Or how it feels to be shot?
I was immediately hit by a barrage of bullets.
Or how you would react if your spouse hired someone to kill you?
And he was to put me in a grave with a bullet wound on my head.
These are the stories you'll hear on the podcast called What Was That Like? True stories told by the actual person who went through it. You'll hear from a stalking victim.
Came back upstairs, and when I came back and turned the corner into my room, I saw him standing there.
You'll hear from a man who was kidnapped and tortured.
I would do anything, say anything, to simply get away.
And you'll hear actual 911 calls.
Take a deep breath.
Oh my God!
Take a deep breath.
Oh my God!
Take a deep breath.
Oh my God!
Real people in unreal situations. Search for What Was That Like on any podcast app, or at whatwasthatlike.com.
Hey there, it's Beth.
And Wendy of Fruit Loop Serial Killers of Color, and we want to tell you about a true crime goodie called The Burden.
The Burden is a new investigative true crime podcast from Orbit Media.
It's one of the year's most anticipated true crime podcast releases, following Orbit's number one hit, Empire on Blood.
The show tells the story of Detective Louis Scarsella, once celebrated for his prowess in solving tough cases in 1990s New York City.
But wait, Scarsella becomes embroiled in controversy as a group of convicted murderers who all claim to be innocent turn jailhouse lawyers uncover his involvement in dozens of cases, leading to the release of over 20 individuals he helped convict.
Wow.
But can they get themselves out too?
The government has paid out a record-breaking $150 million in wrongful conviction settlements, with more to come. Wow, that's crazy.
That's a lot. I can't wait.
Yeah.
The Burden launches on March 19th on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Dax, this is the first story I ever heard Louis Scarsella tell.
The legendary New York detective. Tell me more.
So Detective Scarsella is with his partner. It's lunchtime, and Detective Scarsella and his partner decide that this is the moment to track down a murder suspect.
We park right here. Right here. Lo and behold, a man, 6 foot, 300 pounds, comes out of the house. I said, that's him. I run over to him. I put the gun on him. He's got a Sig Sauer in his waistband, a big Sig Sauer. I jump on him. He's going for the gun. I put my Glock to his head and pull the trigger. But the gun's no good. My gun's no good. I grab him and I knock him to the ground.
Do you ever imagine that Glock goes off?
I intended it to. What am I supposed to kiss him?
Welcome to Louis Brooklyn, where bad guys were around every corner. And it was up to Detective Scarsella to protect the people.
They needed me. And I loved doing it.
Louis' heyday was the 80s and 90s. And back then, all New Yorkers wanted law and order. Louis Scarsella had movie star good looks, smoked a cigar everywhere. He seemed like he was the kind of tough cop the city needed.
He was everybody's idea of the prince of the city. He was the guy who solved the hardest cases and made sure the worst killers were brought to justice.
Louis Scarsella was known as the closer, the one who got the confession. And with that came fame. He was on the Dr. Phil show.
No one knows the art of getting confessions better than 29-year veteran New York City homicide detectives.
And he earned the respect of his peers.
Louis is my guy. He's my man. You know, he's my friend. He's a hell of a cop. Great detective.
He looks like shit now. We'll call it his shit. Steve, the poor guy, they beat the balls off him. You know?
That's right. Years later, the Louis Scarsella story changed.
The once decorated detective now stands accused of coaching witnesses, coercing confessions, and trading drugs for testimony.
Scarsella cracked numerous murder cases in the 80s and 90s, but his techniques have been questioned.
And a group of convicted murderers says it all comes back to one rogue official, and they want their names cleared.
Oh, yeah, I'm the devil, disgraced devil. Yeah, yeah. Well, what can I tell you?
I'm Steve Fishman. I've lived in New York a long time. I've been writing about crime for a long time. Son of Sam, Bernie Madoff, they opened up to me. When I heard these headlines about Scarsella, my thought, this cannot be the whole story. Was this really about one rogue cop? Who what, hoodwinked an entire system?
And I'm Dax Devlin Ross, journalist, author, lawyer. I've written about criminal justice for years. I know what it's like to be wrongfully arrested, personally. And I'm interested in the people who went to jail, and maybe shouldn't have.
We're gonna go deep. Is Louis a hero cop, a scapegoat, or a super villain who helped put away more than 20 innocent men? Men who now want revenge.
Storm cloud are coming, coming straight to you. You can't run for shelter, there's nothing you can do.
From Orbit Media, this is The Burden.
Today on the show, The Scoop.
All right, Steve, where do we begin?
We begin with the person who broke the Louis Scarsella story long before you or I got involved. That's Frances Robles, known to her New York Times colleagues as Frenchie.
The Puerto Rican girl known as Frenchie. I do not speak French.
Frenchie's from Queens, from an Italian neighborhood called Howard Beach.
Howard Beach was an astoundingly racist place.
And growing up there, it taught Frenchie to be fierce.
My best friend in elementary school is Puerto Rican. And so this one kid was like, hey, Puerto Rican, where's your switchblade? And my girlfriend Genevieve and I, we went to his house in sixth grade. We rang the doorbell. And his mother answered the door. She was pregnant. She had her belly out to wherever. Is Anthony home? And she's like, Annie! So he comes, and he's, you know, you can see he's kind of looking at us rather suspiciously, like, what are the two Puerto Rican girls that I bully in school doing at my door? And we beat the crap out of him right there in front of his mother.
Fast forward to 2013, and Frenchie is at the New York Times. She's itching for a good story, something that will make a splash. And one day, she's on a routine assignment when she meets someone interesting.
Was a guy named Derek Hamilton, who was an ex-con who had been kind of like a jailhouse lawyer. And so we're just chatting, and he says, oh, you know, I know a lot of cases in Brooklyn of wrongful convictions.
So Frenchie brings it to her editor.
And I'm like, oh, I have a tip. You know, there's a lot of wrongfully convicted guys in Brooklyn, and I have a good source. He was a jailhouse lawyer. And so my editor says to me, well, what else do the cases have in common? And I was so offended by that question. Like, I just thought it was such a hoity-toity New York Times view of journalism that I couldn't just come up with a wrongful conviction. I had to come up with what connects them. Go back to my desk, kind of grumbling under my breath. And I call Derek. And I'm like, all right, well, this editor of mine wants to know what connects these cases? And he goes, well, a lot of them are the same cop. And his name is Louis Scarsella.
Derek Hamilton was out of prison but still connected to people on the inside. He's a self-taught lawyer, learned the law behind bars, and he was still in the prison grapevine.
So I meet with Derek again. He told me kind of loosey-goosey stuff. Like he said, that this guy was notorious for using the same witness over and over again. But he didn't know the names of the defendants who had had the same witness testify against them. And he did not know the name of the witness. So I was like, oh, brother, you know, here I am talking this up to my editor like I'm some hotshot who's going to crack this case open, and I got nothing.
So she went back to Derek. She needed the name of that very talented witness. And that's when Derek gives her a legal document. This was a document written by one of his friends still in jail, another jailhouse lawyer. It's called a 440 motion, and it's what you file if you're trying to get your conviction overturned.
So he gives me Shabaka Shakur's 440.
I probably rewrote that 100 times because I wanted to make sure that I was saying what I wanted to say.
This is Shabaka Shakur. Scarsella helped convict Shabaka of a double murder, which he says he didn't do. His 440 was impressive. 60 pages of legal argument written while he was part of a prison law firm. That's right, a law firm formed in prison and run by convicted murderers, all of whom claimed innocence.
So I called her. She was like, okay, you said Scarsella's a crooked cop. I read your brief. I said, listen, I gave a list of names, a list of, you know, people she could talk to, information that would substantiate that he was a crooked cop. And I remember telling her, like, you an investigative reporter. Go and investigate.
In that dense document, two pages focused on Louis Scarsella.
He says in this document, something, Louis Scarsella was known to use the same witness over and over again. A woman named Teresa Gomez. And I'm like, ching! You know, that's it. That's the name. That's what I've been waiting for.
So Frenchie has the name. Now she does what a lot of us do when we're hunting for information. She Googles.
That's my big investigative reporting secret. And I got a hit. And I'm like, well, this is curious. It was like some random Google forum, a cigar smoker forum, where somebody has asked, I think the question on the forum was, when did you first smoke your first great cigar? This guy, a man, answers, the first cigar which truly made me realize how much I was going to enjoy cigars was smoked in 1988. The cigar was given to me by a legendary detective of the Brooklyn North Homicide Squad named Louis Scarsella. Louis had been the detective on the first two murder cases I prosecuted, both of which featured the same witness testifying against the same defendant for two different murders. The defendant was a dealer named Robert Hill. The witness was named Teresa Gomez, a woman who was even then ravaged from head to toe by the scourge of crack cocaine. It was near folly to even think that anyone would believe Gomez about anything, let alone the fact that she witnessed the same guy kill two different people. And the guy signs it, and he's now a judge.
She goes to prison, unannounced, to find Robert Hill. Frenchie is waiting in the visitor's room for Robert Hill.
So this guy comes in, he walks with a cane, and he's kind of hunched over, and he has very, very long dreadlocks all down his back. And I see him looking around the room, like, who the heck is that? You know, but all right, fine. So he sits down, and I'll probably never forget this moment for the rest of my life. I said to him, you know, my name is Francis Robles, I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm doing a story on Teresa Gomez. And he just froze and his eyes welled up with tears. And he said, I've been telling people about Teresa Gomez for 25 years. And I said, well, Now somebody's listening. And he said to me, is this going to mess up my parole? And I remember I said something that, you know, ethically I should not have said, and I probably shouldn't even repeat that I said, but I said it. I said, this isn't going to mess up your parole. I said, this is going to get you exonerated. And I said something so ridiculous because I believed it.
Frenchie's story breaks on May 11th, 2013. The headline, Review of 50 Brooklyn Murder Cases Ordered. The story lays it all out. How Teresa Gomez says she witnessed 6 separate murders. Who sees 6 murders? Shabaka's friend, Derek, the one who set all of this in motion, at first, he's pleased when he sees the article. But then, he gets angry. This is personal.
I say, damn, man, it's the same motherfucker that framed me.
You see, Scarsella was the cop who arrested Derek for murder. A murder he insists he didn't do.
You gotta understand something, man. This guy is a piece of shit. But he gets to run around like he's God. We gotta get at this guy.
We gotta attack Scarsella.
If I did one nanogram of what they said I did, I would have killed myself.
Did you guys hear about that couple that went on vacation and one spouse murdered the other? In fact, the entire vacation was planned just so that they could make the murder look like an accident.
Ah, so like a slaycation.
Oh boy, sounds like a fun new true crime podcast to me.
On every episode of Slaycation, we'll examine true cases of people who were killed while on vacation.
Was it murder? Or just a horrible accident? That's up to you and the law to decide.
But either way, if you leave for your vacation in the plane and come home under the plane, you've definitely gone on a slaycation.
Join us every week for a fascinating new episode.
911, what's your emergency?
But make sure to pack your body bags,
because getting away can be murder.
This is Slaycation.
Hi, I'm Matt Harris. Seton Tucker and I host the podcast Impact of Influence, which for 2 years covered in depth Alec Murdoch, who was eventually convicted in 2023 of murdering his wife Maggie and son Paul. That story continues to evolve, and we will cover that. Plus, we will tell you stories of other true crime events that have happened in the South. Please join us on Impact of Influence and give us a follow on the Impact of Influence Facebook page.